This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 6th of June, 1955. The title of this lecture is Six Basic Steps, Some Fundamentals of Auditing. This lecture is 62 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
All right. I want to talk to you now about the fundamental of auditing today in a very, very fast review. Six basic steps. I'm going to give this in an hour, and it only takes 8 weeks to learn them. The six basic steps, as they exist here and now, you will find in a little bit cruder form, but nevertheless quite workable form, in Dianetics 1955. They're put in Dianetics 1955 so that a Dianeticist won't shy away from the word Scientology and religion and so forth, and he will look there and he will see this Dianetics 1955 and he'll feel comfortable and he'll go on using Scientology's six basic steps, which will make a citizen out of him. It's a covert trick, isn't it? First thing you should know about what we're doing in Scientology is that there is more to living than dying. And that there is more to man than sickness. And the purpose of the six basic steps is to bring about not a revival of capability, but to bring about new abilities on the part of a thetan, which means new abilities on the part of man. And these steps are not designed to make men well. If they happen to be sick, it is only their incapability as a spiritual being which continues them in sickness. Therefore, don't treat their sickness, since it is only their inability to handle their sickness that continues that illness. You can cure a sickness without curing the man. Do this with the greatest of ease. So I cannot stress too hard. It is not that anybody has the least qualms. Somebody's going to come along and say, hey, you people are practicing medicine without a license. Who cares? Be a very wild statement. What we're interested in is getting an auditor to pay attention, first and foremost, to the primary and basic goal of what he's doing, because if he doesn't pay attention to it, he doesn't get any success to amount to anything. And if anybody is having any trouble auditing people, I can tell him immediately exactly where his trouble is, which is right there. He's trying to cure something or make somebody well. He's finding something wrong so he can make it right. And as soon as you find something wrong, in order to make it right, you get the persistence of the wrongness. It works out just as easily as that. There's nothing to it. Let's delve into this fellow's psyche and work around until we find a couple of snap neurons, you know, which are synapsizing. And find out that there's a misconnection of the obligata. And now let's put him on skim milk so that he'll get well. We may take his attention off this wrong condition, but we won't make him well. Because the thing wrong with him, if we've got to find a wrongness, is that he isn't controlling that mal condition. He isn't handling it. He's backing up from it. He's running away from it. He's trying to hide it. He's trying to do something else with it. Or he's obsessively trying to change it as matter and energy. So along that road lies failure. And failure has always lain on that road, and it always will. The more vaccines, the more politics, the more illness. Let's pull out from underneath the whole human race every developing ability to handle illness and put them all in a condition where they have to be administered to medically constantly. And we will eventually wind up with a bunch of people we have to keep in vats. If you continue to validate the materialistic aspects of existence and only validate those things, and if you continue to neglect the spiritual abilities which are inherent in the being, you forecast and predict for your auditing and for what you are doing failure all the way along the line. This tells you that the words healing science applied to Scientology are about the wildest misnomer you could apply, because it would hand to the auditor the wrong formula. It would give him the wrong idea and the wrong goal about what he's trying to do. And he'd take the six basic processes then and start to heal things with them. Well, yes, working cleverly, working with communication, working with other things, he undoubtedly could heal a great many things. But in no case would he heal the preclear. Now, I told you the other day about the old man who came up, and I told an auditor to say hello and okay to his cataract until finally the fellow developed sight in his eye again. Maybe you missed part of that story. I want to punch that up, but I saved that punch for right this minute. The man had no wider concept of existence at the end of 25 hours of expert coach professional processing than he had at the beginning. He had experienced no enlightenment, no increase in ability. He could simply see better with one eye. And he was being just as silly and just as stupid at the end of that week as he had been at the beginning of the week. Now, if we had operated on these eyes, if we had done all sorts of strange things to cure up these cataracts, filled him full of vitamins or something of the sort, we would have had the same condition of beingness. If we want to hang the responsibility for cataracts upon anything, you had better hang it on when he's in his inability to have good eyes. And unless you improved his ability to have, to control, to handle, to develop, to keep well his own eyes, you would have failed. Why should anybody be dismayed because an operation, a medical operation, fails? If he knew this, he certainly would not be dismayed. Therefore, I'm not arguing, I never will argue against medicine. No reason to argue against it. We're not talking about a healing science. We're talking about a science of ability. And part of that ability happens to be, incidentally, being well. Part of the ability. If we took a huge disc here and we cut it up into an infinitely small number of pie slices, an infinite number, tiny little pie slices that you couldn't see with a microscope, one of those would be the ability to stay well, and the rest of them would be important. Therefore, the direction of processing is successful so long as the auditor is knowingly aware that he is increasing the ability of a spiritual being as long as he's aware of this, increasing the ability of a thetan to handle existence. Might lie in the field of education. You give a thetan some data, he says, hey, what do you know? Gee. Oh, so that's how you handle women. You know, bang. Might lie in the field of exercising, you know. Getting him to practice having a body ride a motorcycle or a bicycle or a horse. You know, that's just exercise. That's physical culture. Might lie in a great many fields. But mostly, it lies in the field of being able to think and handle one's thoughts. Because thought is senior to everything else there is. All other things stem from thought. I told you, I was finally forced into this as a final conclusion, that although thought might be influenced by masses, it could only be influenced by those masses which had been created by that thought. Therefore, concepts running, an old timer, way back when, running of concepts is successful. Why is it successful? You just run the thought that made the mass, and the mass will disappear. You just think the thought parallel to this bothersome thought over here, and they both disappear. The thought made the aberration. Well, if a thought can make aberration, it can also make sanity, and it can make anything else. It can make universes. So let's remember, when we're processing a pre-clear, that we are increasing this individual's ability and capability to live, and that there is more to living than dying, and more to a man than sickness. So, the first and foremost step of auditing today is to get the pre-clear aware of his environment, of his auditor, of the session, and then get him into communication. We don't care what he's going to talk about. This is as long as we can get him to talk in a two-way communication, as entirely distinct from a one-way associative flow. The auditor has to know how to acknowledge communications. He has to know how to originate communications. And he has to get the pre-clear to a point where the pre-clear gets into a two-way communication. When we've done that, we have an auditing session well on the road. And actually, the first basic goal of the auditor is to achieve a two-way communication with the pre-clear. Now, the oddity is, you can sometimes do it with masses. Hand pressures on an unconscious person will sometimes bring him into a two-way communication, which is an oddity, isn't it? Now, as soon as we get him into some awareness of his environment, the auditor, and in a two-way communication, we're ready to go. And we call the first step of the six basic steps two-way communication. That's the first step. But that first step assumes that an auditing session is in progress. So the first step is preceded by an auditing session. Just this way, awareness of the existence of a session. Where it's happening, and with whom it's happening. So you have to start a session. So when we say start a session, we're not saying anything very light and airy. We're saying start the session with the pre-clear. It's one of the reasons coffee shop auditings is sometimes not successful at all. A fellow sitting there trying to eat his coffee, donuts, you know, and dunking away, and some fellow suddenly asks him, give me three places where your mother isn't beating you. The fellow says, oh, I can find some. Where's present time? He didn't know a session was in progress. There was no agreement on this at all. Now, there's a lower harmonic on the process known as HC, which fits right in there with the auditing session beginning. Without getting the pre-clear into two-way communication, you can ask him questions and have him note the answers. He doesn't give you the answers. He doesn't respond. He merely notes the answers. You could say, how many chairs are in this room? And the fellow kind of looks around. That's an answer. It's not two-way communication, but you at least have gotten something through to the fellow. You made him more aware of the room. You say, how many ceilings are there in this room? All right, she said, does this room have a floor? You say, well, how many windows do you see here? There's a lot of them. Finally say, what are we doing? Oh, you're auditing me. Well, fine. Now, why don't you tell me something about your life and what you do? We're in two-way communication. We can actually haul a person up out of the morass of no communication by simply calling their attention to various things in their environment and having them note them. They don't even answer us. That's a low harmonic on 8C. They're not moving around touching anything. They're not being directed or ordered particularly. They're just sitting there and they just note some things and you note that they note them. Well, that's one way to start a session on a case that's really gone. It's quite workable too. Then we get into a two-way communication, the first step of two-way communication. No reason particularly going into the formulas to two-way communication. There's a whole book on the subject, Dianetics 1955. All right. Both people have to originate, both people have to acknowledge in order to have a two-way communication. In order to understand any further step than this, we have to understand communication lag, and that is the length of time between the posing of the question and the receiving of the answer, regardless of what intervenes. This tells you that there are communication lags which are trillions of years old. Somewhere back on the track, you said while you were traveling along in your rocket ship, you said to your fellow rocket jockey, you said, say, Bill, what's that funny noise? Don't be surprised if through a few billion years up the track, somebody walks up to you and says, well, it's too late now. All right, we have somebody poses a question, and he says, how do you feel? And the person he asks the question of, this is a poor question because it can have a machine answer, by the way. You know, the person just automatically says, I'm fine or something. But he says to this person, how do you feel? And this person says, well, I never could stand my grandmother. Communication lag is in progress. No answer received. You'd have to kind of prod him along a little bit more. You say, how do you feel? Oh, my grandmother's a terrible person. No communication. You'd say, how do you feel? And this person, I was telling you the other day about a preclear, he asked her time after time after time after time after time, consistently and continually. The person said, I'm not receiving any results from processing. He'd say, how do you feel? The person would say, I'm receiving no results and nothing is changing and so forth. Never did answer this question until been in session about 5 or 10 hours, something on this order. Then finally one night said, got what he said, she said, with something like, I feel terrible. That was about a 10-hour con lag, you see, over such a length of time, just to receive that one question. Now, another person, you start to say, how do you feel? You know, you say, how do you? And they say, well, I thought I'd better come down here because I've been worrying lately. I've been having hallucinations and that, the belfry. My husband says I have these things. And, you know, I think it's very mean of him to go on the way he does, but he keeps telling me I'm crazy, crazy. He says I talk all the time, all the time. That's all he ever says, I talk all the time. 3 hours later, no answer. It's all talk in between. That's one of the first things that people have a little hard time learning about a communication lag, that it can be filled up with talk, not silence. Either one, you see, it can be a silent lag or it can be a talking lag, a compulsive outflow lag. Or it could be a nervous or jitter lag, or it could be an emotional lag, where the preclear you say, how do you feel? And they say, wah! So we have all sorts of things that could fill in this gap. It just doesn't mean silence. So it's the length of time between the posing of the question and the receiving of the exact answer to that question. Now, I don't know, by the way, is an answer to a question. Auditors also miss that sometimes. You say, how do you feel? Fellow says, I don't know. Auditor's unwilling to accept this and thinks he's in a communication line. He's not. The person told you the truth. They don't know. Haven't felt anything for years. All right, so we have this whole subject of communication lag. And that has to be understood, really, to carry on any kind of a sensible two-way communication. But the two-way communication's basic, the basic on it, is knowing the formula of two-way communication. Things have to be acknowledged, communications have to be originated, both sides. The auditor has to originate them, the preacher has to acknowledge them, the preacher has to originate them, and the auditor has to acknowledge them. There's a mechanical drill that belongs way upscale from two-way communication, called mechanical two-way communication, which belongs in opening procedure by duplication, way upscale. It's too tough for a great number of preclears, but a very beneficial process. But it has the formula of two-way communication in its exact severity. People asked to face that much communication, if they can't even say how they feel, are not likely to be able to do the process. But anyway, the formula of two-way communication is the basic in two-way communication, of course. And we move up, and the next thing we have to know very definitely is comm lag before we go into the significance processes. And these significance processes today could be a great many processes. All of the processes on this plotting chart, each and every one of these processes, every single one of them belongs in the significance process band. And that band lies between two-way communication and opening procedure of 8C. Those are all significance processes. There could be thousands of processes in that band. They are all dependent upon a mechanism. And the mechanism is simply this. The auditor continues to ask a question, and the preclear continues to answer the question until there is no further communication lag on that question. You see the simple mechanism. You could say, did your grandmother wear a hat? And the fellow says, no. And you say, all right, did your grandmother wear a hat? And the fellow says, well, I don't know, sometimes. And you say, okay, now did your grandmother wear a hat? Well, I don't know, hats being what they were in those days, I suppose she did. Well, fine. Well, there'd be no communication lag on that at all. The process would be flat. You can go off to another higher, worse, more arduous process. But look at this. Did your grandmother wear a hat? Who? Process isn't flat. Now, we get as the first and foremost of these processes that we handle on this significance band. You see, the auditor has now established a session, and the first step of the session after it was established was two-way communication. And as soon as two-way communication seems to be fairly able and going along, all right, you know, he's got the fellow conscious of that, he'd then move up into the significant band of processes, and he'd start paying attention to communication lag. And the first process that he would start to stress and handle would be problems and solutions, R220. That's the first thing he'd think of. And if that was all he thought of, he would still win. But if he thought of problems and solutions and added to that consequences, he certainly would win. We would get these things all flat. We would get the preclear completely able to dream up any number of problems about himself or anything or anybody else. And he'd stop holding clutched to his bosom his cherished problem of not having a head or something. You know, a lot of preclears go around, they get so desperate for problems, they solve them so easily and ably, they get so desperate for problems that they go along clutching a missing arm. The arm is apparent to you. You can see they've got an arm. But they use an arm, but the arm to them has no density or feeling to amount to anything. They've got a missing arm. It's a nice problem, no arm. It was a terrific problem to them at one time. They become so short on problems, in this modern age that they no longer have enough problems to go along with. See? So they start pulling in old problems of this character. They pull in all kinds of problems, a missing arm. His hearing isn't so good. It's just a problem. It puts a problem on the communication line. Any problem is to some degree a break of communication. And so he's got to, doesn't hear well. That's a problem. Doesn't see well, has to wear glasses. That's a problem. His right foot is a little bit twisted. That's a problem. But these are problems expressed in mass. To call these things illnesses would be a misnomer. They're not illnesses. If you treat them as illnesses, what'll happen? If you throw this whole thing over into healing, we get just to the crux of the matter immediately. If we throw this into healing, we'll start to change a twisted foot. We're trying to take a problem away from the poor guy. And he's got a twisted foot. He hasn't got enough problems already. And we're going to straighten up his foot. Now, sir. Furthermore, we're going to change mass. And the second we change something, we give it time, and it'll start persisting. So if we categorize any of these exercises into healing, we're going to lose right there with problems and solutions. His main difficulty, and this applies to anybody living in a very safe society like this, his main difficulty is he doesn't have enough problems. Talking to you the other day about if you got a big army, you naturally have to have a war. Follows, doesn't it? If you have police, you have to have criminals. There must be an awful lot of criminals around if we've got all these tens of thousands of police. Well, what state do you think those police are in? Why does this phenomenon exactly, why does it occur? It occurs specifically because of this. The police do not have enough problems per capita. The basic function of thinkingness is to pose and resolve problems relating to survival, all right? And the police go around and they haven't got any problems. All the citizens are walking along and they say, "How are you, officer?" They're very polite to them. And they all park in the right places. They move at the right times. They don't loiter on the corners. They throw no trash. They don't spit in the wrong places. They stay out of the places they're supposed to stay out of. Everything is going along fine. Apathy. You see that? They go home and read Real Detective. You know what they'll do eventually? This happens in a fascist state, and it's practically the definition of a fascist state. If you want to know when a state enters fascism, this is what's occurring. The police cause problems and criminality overtly and knowingly. They take people and they start, the police start beating in storefronts and grabbing citizens out of their homes and shaking them down and so forth. In other words, they start to create problems. They can't stand this monotony anymore. And they find somebody who will lead them, and you've got a fascist state. That's happened in Germany, happened in many places. You recognize that? All right, what is the basic cause of it? Basic cause is a scarcity of problems. Not enough. Boy, I tell you, just to be pretty clear, on the genetic line, his body, rather, Preckler's body on the genetic line, was rushing out of the jaws of death three times a day. You know? Snake fangs went crunch here, and pterodactyls went swish there, and you stepped into a bog, and the earthquake came, and gaps opened in the earth, and you stepped just at the right time. Boy, there's plenty of problems. Lots of problems. No scarcity at all. Nothing like that to keep a man in present time. Keeps him in present time, keeps him alert, keeps the environment in good shape. He feels good. Every time he turns around, he's demonstrating his competence or his incompetence on a black and white Aristotelian proposition. No maybes. He doesn't sit around wondering all day, "Gee, I wonder if somebody sometime this year will commit a crime on my beat." He doesn't sit around wondering as his store is going along and making money evenly and carefully, and all of his customers are nice to him and his help is efficient and so forth. He doesn't sit there wondering if possibly he might at least go broke next year. Did you ever see anybody who was involved in a totally successful business just sitting there stewing? Worry. Huh? There's only one thing wrong with him. He just has not enough problems. We got to find something wrong with him. Well, the oddity is we take this person, we take this cop who's going bad, bored. I've seen cops, by the way, walk into bars and simply take somebody who was standing up against the bar, minding his own business, drinking beer, and turn him around and say, "What are you doing here?" and shake him around and finally hit him. And then say, "Look at the fight this guy started." Kick all of his teeth out, load him onto a wagon. Shouldn't have done that. Well, just last night, just down the street here in Connecticut Avenue, I saw a cop standing there. There was a drunk. He was kind of feeling bad, and he was sitting on a set of stone steps, and he was sitting there. He wasn't bothering anybody, and the cop came along and told him he'd better send him to jail. And the fellow said, "Why?" And, "Well, I don't know. You're liable to get in trouble sitting out here." It's true, too. The cop was making it true. The drunk wasn't bothering anybody. All right. Now, that isn't just germane to police. It's germane to almost anything. If you've got, supposing you had a perfectly calm, beautifully calm nation, where things were going very well and the citizenry was fairly happy and everything was orderly and there was no hidden stores of arms. Supposing your Ogepeu or something of the sort had the name and address of every foreign agent or adherent in the country and could arrest him at a moment's notice, knew exactly what he was doing, and your boys were secretary of all of the revolutionary groups. Supposing everything was going along fine, there was no depression in progress, there was food. And you didn't have to do a thing because all of your assistants were so efficient. Boy, about the only thing you could possibly think of was starting a war with somebody. That'd be one of the finest things you could think of, you know. Of course, if you were unable to start a war, or if you were repressed in doing this, you'd probably go on off into psychosomatic illness or, well, I don't know, scandal or impeachment or something of the sort. One would hardly be able to rest through all that. As a matter of fact, I'm not talking about Russia or any other country of modern times. I'm talking about the Roman Empire. That's exactly what happened to it. Augustus got in, and, you know, there was no trouble from there on out. He just solved all the problems. And this left people like Caligula and Tiberius and Nero and so forth, and those guys really had worries. You know, how am I going to fiddle just right? All right, you're pretty clear sitting there. Because he's in a modern society, because he can buy his food at a delicatessen, because he can find work, he's sitting there in a vacuum of problems. So he's going to manufacture a whole lot of problems unknowingly. And that is the motto of any upset. He's doing something unknowingly that he could do knowingly. And all the auditor has to do is pull this unknowingness up into a knowingness. And that's falsehood. But, oddly enough, the unknowingness to knowingness band does not itself constitute an enormously difficult problem. There is no liability to knowing. People even try to dream them up. They say, you know, gosh, if I knew all there was to know about this, and if I didn't have all the neurotic, by the way, we have two sciences that hold very close to their chests the idea that if we didn't have neuroses, we would have no art. Look, I know an awful lot of fellas who were good artists and then they got neurotic and didn't art anymore. But I never knew the reverse. Fellow that's really dishing it out, throwing out the pieces of canvas like mad, throwing out the stories, writing the music and so forth, is doing best when he's sanest. All you have to do is observe this. But we had two outfits that wanted problems so badly that they even wished this problem off of themselves. This is a huge problem, isn't it? The only way to be a successful artist is not to be an artist. And there you've got a neat problem. So all kinds of things immediately stem out of this sort of thing. Problems run well enough, long enough, problems and solutions run long enough on a has-been artist, we'll put him back in business again. This is certainty. So right there at that strata, you have a very powerful forward push in ability, because his foremost ability is the origination of problems and his solution of those problems. And that's a foremost ability. That's right up there in the lead. So we've got to put his ability to rights on problems and solutions. We never put the fellow to rights at all. All right. If we have somebody who is apparently afraid, you would say by this formula, the best thing to do is make him able to be afraid. Not find something wrong with his being afraid. But let's put it under his control so that he can really be afraid if he wants to. So he can scare himself purple. And what do you know? Won't bother him anymore. But he sure probably will bother somebody else with it. Anyway, where we have somebody who is lingering below this band of problems and solutions, we probably have consequences as a very fine process. Now, it fits right in that same bracket. The one you want to think of, the one that is really the important one, is problems and solutions. Right next door to this, we've got consequences. Now, how long does it take to run problems and solutions flat? We've audited it as long as 80 hours on a pre-clear with benefit, alternating it. You know, a couple of dozen problems, a couple of dozen solution questions, a couple of dozen problems, a couple of dozen solutions. About 80 hours. This guy coming up all the time, all the way. He was one of the roughest cases anybody ever tried to exteriorize with a jackhammer. That's right, he wouldn't have come out of his head if you'd taken a diamond drill to him. And about 80-some hours, problems and solutions, we were getting a resolution of this problem. Quite cute. So there was quite a bit there in thinking this. All right. We would then be able to run consequences and this tone scale chart, which I have given you. And we could run the whole thing and any combination of processes on there, and I believe there probably is 10,000 processes on that chart. Any one of them would increase his ability one way or the other. But remember, the key note is problems and solutions. All right, if a fellow is, you find his level of certainty, his level of reality on that chart, have him originate problems about that. Supposing we found out this fellow's level of reality was responsibility. Just have him originate some problems about responsibility. That's refining the process, but it's doing the job very fast and very well. All right, the next step up from that is a process known as opening procedure of 8C. And do you know this process is too tough for many pre-clears? The ability to go over, obeying somebody else's command, and touch a wall and know it's there and let go of it is quite often above the ability of a human being. Number one, he attributes all of his trouble to having followed orders too often. That's what's wrong with him. Followed orders. People told him to do things. He followed orders. That's wrong. No, that couldn't possibly be his trouble. His trouble might stem from the fact that nobody gave him any orders. He was doing all the ordering and nobody else ever ordered him around. That might be trouble. Or nobody ever really gave him an order. They said, his father kept saying to him, go over and pick up that hammer. What are you doing with that hammer? Never let him complete a cycle of action, something like this. So he gets allergic to accepting orders, and he starts to fight the environment around him. This wall over here says, I'm a wall to him. And he says, no, I must be something else. What's happening? The wall is actually giving him an order. It's saying, be located so many feet from me, or I am a wall, or you have to be convinced I am a wall. It's saying something to him, isn't it? And if he can't receive this, order particularly, stop when you hit me. He'll be in trouble with Walls all the time. See, he can't receive orders. So your auditor has to be a very exact handler of the preclear in giving him orders running HC. There are a tremendous number of side effects of this HC. It is a process which has three parts, as contained I think it's issue 24G, the old Journal of Scientology. A, B, and C. The first one is simply you just ask the guy to go around and touch things, and you ask him to go around and touch them, let go of them, but you ask him very precisely. You say, do you see that table? The fellow says, mm-hmm. You say, fine. You always acknowledge the preclear. He says, yep. You say, fine. Now walk over to it. And he does, and you say, fine. So you've acknowledged that he's done it. All right. Now you say to him, all right, touch it. He does. And you say, now that's fine. All right. Now let go of it. And he does. And you say, good. All right. Now, do you see that chair over there? And he says, yes. You say, fine. Walk over to it. All right. Touch it. He does. You say, okay. And you say, let go of it. And he does. And you say, that's fine. That's good. And in this way, you send him around two objects and make him make and break communication with these objects. And this is the purpose of it. He's following orders. He's completing cycles of action. And he's finding out all the time, look, I can complete a cycle of action. Look, I can follow an order without falling flat. Look, there is a universe around here after all. Very interesting things occur. A variation was introduced on this. Had to put attention on something and then touch it. And this on a preclear who's having trouble, particularly in centering himself and so forth, is occasionally very, very good. Now, here we have a process which runs on a comm lag, too. We watch the comm lags of 8C. We watch it very carefully. How long, you know, the people who do the oddest things, you say, go on over and touch that wall. They go over. They do the darndest things when you run this process. You'd be amazed. It's just their inability to actually make contact, to actually locate or be located. And that's a comm lag. Anytime you say, all right, you see that table, and the preclear goes promptly over and touches it, puts his hand on it, and lets go. What do? You say, I ask you a question. Do you see that table over there? Well, yeah, I just touched it. Well, all right, walk over to it. Oh, you want me to do that again? So he walks over, puts his hand on it, lets go, and says, there. You say, all right, now touch it. You get the idea. You make him fit in the groove with a cycle of action. Very, very remarkable what occurs. But what are you doing? You're not getting him over anything. You're not getting him over a thing. All you're doing is making him capable of following some orders. And if a fellow can't follow them, he can't give them. A fellow who can't do HC gives orders in this fashion. All right, Johnny, you see the hammer over there? Go on and get it. What are you doing picking up that hammer? All right, bring me my slippers. Where the devil is that kid? Well, I was just bringing your slippers, Papa. Why? Who said anything about slippers? Where are you going now? Go on out and water the lawn. Go on out and water the backyard. No, I said the front yard. What? He says to this fellow after the fellow's reported to him, he said, well, all right, good. The fellow starts to walk away. He says, come back here. Where are you going? He can't finish a communication. All kinds of oddities occur in his behavior. Simply because he cannot give, he cannot receive orders, directions, instructions, which tells you immediately he can't be a communication terminal. So there's something very wrong with his thereness, and he finds wrong things with everything else's thereness, so he's in trouble. And that's what HC is run toward. Finally, it progresses up with two more steps so that it locate an object is the next step, and the fellow has to pick out an object, make up his mind, make a decision about an object in the room, and then he walks over to it and touches the third part of it. When he's going to touch it is up to him, and when he's going to let go of it is up to him. And this gives him decision and timing. And it's very, very interesting process. All right, the next process is opening procedure by duplication. Why are these both called opening procedure? Well, that's their name. An opening procedure by duplication in Great Britain is called book and bottle. When I first put it out, it was called Dirty 30. I started calling it Dirty 30, and an auditor that was here had some remark on that. He said something or other, and he said, if an auditor did that wrong, why, he ought to turn in his thetan right then. It's not the exact joke, but it's very similar. Anyway, book and bottle. You set up, for instance, a book, and you set up a bottle, and you have the pre-clear, go over to the book. You say, do you see that book? Now, you see, we've gotten him all through so he can follow orders. Now let's have him follow the same confounded order time after time after time after time after time after time after time. It is true that if you were to take a bad off pre-clear and do duplication processing on him, without doing the intervening steps, without the lower scale steps, that he would feel very hypnotic before he got through. But he would come out of it. And if you ran it only a short space of time, he'd probably feel hypnotic, which gave people the idea that it was a sort of an hypnotizing technique. There has been more cursing and swearing and damning on the subject of opening procedure by duplication. All right. You have the person walk over to the book. You say, you see that book? All right, walk over to it. All right, look at it. Okay, pick it up. All right, what's its color? Okay, what's its temperature? Okay, what is its weight? Okay, fine, put it in exactly the same place you found it. Good, now you see that bottle? All right, walk over to it. Now the oddity is, in this process, is it can be done wrong by the auditor. The process has a great exactness connected with it. Those commands for each of the two items, just repetitively, one item after the other, one after the other, back and forth, must never be varied. The pre-clear must never be permitted to blow the session, run away, quit. But although the exactness of the procedure must never be varied, it is a bad auditor who does not use two-way communication while running it. And this is quite a trick. Isn't that quite a trick? So it takes a good auditor, and it gets good results when it has a good auditor. You say, do you see that book? And the fellow says, yeah, you mean that thing? And you say, yeah, that one over there on the table. So you didn't vary the command. You say, okay, walk over to it. He says, all right. And you say, thank you. Good. Take a look at it. And what do I want to look at this thing for? Oh, go on. Take a look at it. I don't know. I'm not interested in a book like that. You say, well, you might find something interesting about it. That's a book by Gibbon. Interesting book. And, well, all right, so I'm looking at it. So what? You say, fine, thank you. Now, pick it up. And whatever his attitude is, he usually has comments of one kind or another. He makes all sorts of remarks and comments as he's running the process. And the trick is to answer these, not to break two-way communication, to get the pre-clear to volunteer comments while he's running this thing. And at the same time, never vary the procedure one iota. Because you're talking with him and he's talking with you, never, never forget that the next step is temperature. but as the temperature of the book. You see, the auditor isn't doing duplication of anything except the auditing commands. It isn't a test of whether or not the auditor can sit there and reel off a certain set of commands over and over and over and over and over. It is no test of this. But an auditor who hasn't had it run on him will think it is. So this horrible torture, this dirty 30, this horrible thing that should never occur, if run with two-way communication on a pre-clear, who has been run properly on the earlier steps, will produce fabulous results. What results does it produce? It gets him over the idea of preventing everything from happening again. It makes it possible for him to see. It also makes it possible for his body to duplicate in a little more relaxed fashion its environment, because the body's bank does just that. Do you know a lot of the things that a fellow thinks are engrams hanging on the front of his face are simply the body duplicating obsessively the wall he's facing? He merely has some sort of a mass around his body somewhere which obsessively duplicates everything. By feeling instead of sight. The flat feet of a cop are simply an obsessive duplication of the floor and the pavement. If you wanted to get him over fallen arches, you'd certainly better get his feet over being upset about duplication. But we're not interested in fallen arches. We're just interested in living. If a person cannot do the same thing twice, he's in bad shape. Look at how much newness he has to face all the time just to live if he can't do the same thing twice. And yet many people find it very, very dangerous to do the same thing twice. Why? Because it makes them predictable. And they know everybody is after them. Why is everybody after them? Well, they've been punished, haven't they? So they're guilty. Well, so a person running opening procedure by duplication, after a while, is perfectly willing to have himself located, which is a great oddity all by itself. You know, he's willing to be there. He's willing to wear clean clothes. He's willing to dress up and show a bright face to the world. He's willing to talk to people. It's not dangerous to be there. He can do it again. You see? There are many people who can't do it again. In fact, the bulk of the race. And already, by opening procedure by duplication, you are moving out of the capabilities of Homo sapiens. And the second you start to move him out of the capabilities, which is some place in opening procedure of HC, you start to move him out of that, you move him on into opening procedure by duplication, and a new man starts to show up. Any time, if you've run everything smoothly in these six basic steps, any time during opening procedure by duplication, you'd expect an exteriorization. And if you don't get it during that process, and yet you flatten the process, you can get an exteriorization by the next step, which is remedy of havingness, one of the more fantastic steps. Remedy of havingness is a very simple thing. You have the individual mock up things and shove them in to himself. Have him mock up a mass and shove it into himself. You don't care what the significance of the mass is. You can make it much more entertaining by giving the mass significance. But it's just a matter of mass. You can have it black planets, pink planets, blue planets, anything that he could mock up. You could have men, women, children, cars, cats, kings, coal heavers. It doesn't matter, as long as it's a mass. And you have him mock this up and have him shove it into his body. I get that as a very important change that I made a few months ago. You have him shove it into his body. You never let a pre-clear pull anything into his body if he's interiorized. And don't even let him pull anything into himself if he's exteriorized. Mock up a planet and pull it in is a wrong command. Mock up a planet and thrust it into the body if you wish to be Bostonian. Or shove it in, if you wish to be Arizonian. Is the correct command. You want this individual to shove the mass in. Now, you get him to shove in masses into the body from various quarters. And what do you know? All of a sudden, he's back of the body here someplace throwing masses into it. You say, where are you throwing these in from? Oh, he's back here. Oh, whoa! And this was the fellow who told you, science is going to win, and religion and the spirit, that's a lot of bunk. And Scientology, what's this business about 3 feet back of your head? You know, that guy, if you ran him up these steps and then had him start shoving in masses, boy, would his Thetan be red. Now, the three principal buttons of this exteriorization are found down in significance processing. And if you have any feeling at all that the preclear is not going to exteriorize easily or something of the sort, you certainly better run consequences or problems and solutions on those three buttons. And those three buttons are ownership, responsibility, and control. You better hit those on this tone scale. Because he's so obsessed and so worried about controlling this body, he's got such a crushing hold on it without knowing it. He's practically smashing it in from all sides and saying, Joe's doing it. Or demons are fighting him. Who's the demon? Him. He is. This kind of a condition is remedied in the significance band. And so, normally, in running the significance band, you would simply hit those three buttons. Because if they aren't remedied, the person doesn't even exteriorize on remedy of having this with any certainty. See, he'll run it and have a vague feeling of being out. But if he keeps this up very long, you just drop back to significance processing and get him upscale on ownership, responsibility, and control. What would happen if you control something? What would happen if you didn't control something? The model command. And get this flat, get this straightened out so that he's not quite as upset. I processed a medical doctor, a very good friend of mine. No cracks. He's a very good friend of mine. He'd been in trouble for about 30 years. And I processed this fellow. He's a splendid man. But I knew he'd always had trouble in processing. And I asked him this one question. Over and over and over and over until we got it flat. And after that, a 30-year difficulty, a physical 30-year difficulty went away. And, of course, being a doctor and being concentrated on healing, all he kept talking about was that a 30-year-old difficulty, which had resisted everything, had gone away. And this was very startling to him, and he didn't notice that he was now willing to talk to people and his wife. I was processing him so he could communicate with people, and he thought he was getting processed so that he'd get well over this thing. It just went away incidentally. And all I asked him was this. How do you go about controlling people? Give me some methods of controlling people. How do you go about it? Give me some methods. How do you do this? How do you control people? Give me a good way to control people. Come on, how do you go about controlling people? I just kept this up hour after hour. Bowie's case, sky wide and handsome. Couldn't help it. Because he was fixed on such methods of controlling people, and his difficulties in life was his chief method of controlling himself as a people. His body was a people, and he was controlling it. And how do you control people? You emasculate them. Interesting, huh? He is having all sorts of fantastic difficulties. Just like that. Time after time through life, these things had occurred. All right, so control is a very important button. Ownership, responsibility, and control have to be cleared up with a pre-clear. If you get him into remedy of having this and he doesn't exteriorize with certainty, then you know very well that you skimped down there in significances. And you'll have to drop back down and handle those three buttons and handle them very well. Now, of course, to handle those buttons, you might have been processing a guy way over his head. He might be down there and waiting. So you'll have to use your head to figure this out. This is a rough case. All right. So, what is the next step, remedy of having? We don't care what we have him shove in. When he's outside of his body, we also have him shove things into himself, which is an oddity, you know. He'll be back here shoving things into himself as a Thetan. And usually for some time he won't notice that he's doing this. But a Thetan should be able to be in two places at once. And if he can't be, he's an only one. All right. So you remedy that with remedy of happiness. Now let's take the whole category, the whole next category of processes, which are called spotting spots. Now there is a process called spotting spots, which is simply just that, spotting spots. You have him spot a spot here, and spot a spot there, and spot where he's born, spot here. Do various things. It's a curious and interesting process. Spot a spot, now throw some hellos and okays to it. You know, now spot a spot here. Now spot where you're born, throw some hellos and okays to it. Have it throw some hellos and okays to you. A lot of razzle-dazzle processes, which are very beneficial. But this whole category, I suddenly woke up, is called Route 1. Spotting spots is Route 1. That's all you do in Route 1. Spot spots. What's Route 1? It's the basic exercises of exteriorization of the thetan as given in the creation of human ability. You just have him spot spots and communicate with spots until he's finally fairly used to the idea and he isn't obsessively avoiding spotting spots and he's in good shape. And those are the six basic steps of auditing and the things that an auditor should know and the things which will get today results by the ton for the auditor. How many hours should a person be audited? He ought to be audited until he's an operating thetan. Thank you very much.